Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
I've had a busy morning. It's like after years of, or not years, but you know, like a year of like having one thing to do every 3 days. Like now I'm having like three or four things to do a day. And I'm like, ugh, fuck, this is gross.
Oh my God.
But I'm going to be on The View Monday morning. So I had to do a pre-interview on about The View, which is like not my scene, but well, but, we'll see.
You know,
we'll
on The View is going to make The View a different thing, and that will serve the program overall, I think.
Yeah. Well, I told him how Megan has me blocked. And I don't know if they want to talk about that. I'm perfectly fine with it. And she's like, no, I think we'll skip over that.
Wow.
Like,
all right. Can't take the heat.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, let's just say we've already started. This is a podcast called The Three Questions. I mean, you probably know that because you clicked on it. I mean, unless like you're being held hostage and someone is forcing you to listen to this out of some kind of torture. Well, let me tell you, they're wrong. This is going to be good. I have a guest today that I am very excited to talk to. I don't know her. I've never met her. But she is on just one of the best shows I've seen in a long, long time. And I am not a big fan of comedy. No kidding. I kind of feel like it's like the way that my stepfather Plumber wouldn't want to watch HGTV. I come home and I want to see murders. I want to see, you know, mafia. I want to, you know.
Yeah, maybe I don't want HGTV.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, Hannah is on a show called Hacks on HBO, which I started hearing about, you know, like I do from the people I trust, mentioning it on Twitter. And holy shit, is it a great show. And holy shit, are you great in it?
Oh, thank you.
So thank you for being here.
That's so nice. And I've been, I just tearfully watched you and Conan at LARC. Is that shot at Largo?
It is Largo. Yeah. Yeah.
Doing the little farewells. And so this whole week has been me, and I mean this in a platonic way, consuming the two of you.
So. Well, thank you. Yeah, no, it's been a weird week. It's been a weird week. And it's also strange because we've been through things like this. We've been through the ends of shows and then like a wrap party at the end of show where we're not quite sure what's going to happen next. And then something else happens. When I left the Conan show, like in 2000, there was a period of like the celebration of Andy, which it was the first time I ever took anti-anxiety drugs. Because I just found myself being like full of rage. Mm-hmm. It was crazy because it was all love and everything, but it was just, I felt like I was a bride at a wedding that wouldn't stop. And I just don't like that. You know, I mean, I like some attention, but too much makes me crazy. So this one was weird because it is kind of like, it's not a finality, but like, I don't think we're going to be coming back and doing any more late night talk showy kind of thing. I mean, it's going to be some kind of different format. So this is kind of it for this show. And, you know, we were talking, Jack Black was on the last show and he had hurt himself. We had a pre-tape bit and we were trying to figure out how we could use the pre-tape footage and what could we do? Can we do this? Should we have it at all? And I realized as we're talking about it, like, oh my God, this is the last bit. Mm. Like, this is like the thing we've done a million times, which is we got this bit. It's going to be done in an hour and a half. How do we fix it? You know? And I was like, oh my God, this is the last one of these. I mean, not, you know, ever in my life. Right. It's not like I'm being euthanized.
But, yeah, certain.
You know, so, but anyway, that's enough about me. So Einbinder, that's obviously a fake name just because it sounds so cool. And it's a sure home, showbiz home run. Wow, right?
You are alone in that opinion. No one has ever said it's cool. People have usually said it's troublesome.
Yes, cool. I know.
Wow.
It sounds like a school scold in Germany, like when somebody brings too much in their backpack. Einbinder!
Einbinder translates to one bookmaker, a bookbinder in German.
Oh, okay.
So yes, you're right on with that.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also just German.
Yeah.
German just has such...
You know, since the show has come out, I got a lot of long-lost cousins and...
no shit, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, are they looking for cash or just looking to be friends?
I mean, it hasn't gotten that far, but I think maybe 3 years ago, I was really curious because I've never met anyone not related to me with my last name. Never, never, never. And so I searched Einbinder on Instagram and a couple accounts came up and I clicked on them and messaged all of these people and was like, hey, are you, like, some of them weren't even Jewish. Some of them were, you know, just like so many similarities, but not related. None of them were actually related to me, but there was one, and this is funny because it actually relates to my prepared answer for the first question.
Oh.
There's someone who said, hey, I found papers saying that my last name was Einbinder with an A, and that's the Yiddish pronunciation of Einbinder.
Yeah.
Is it possible that we are related? And I too, years ago, found a similar document that had Einbinder on it. So I did message this person. It turns out they're Polish. I'm Russian. Let's call the whole thing off. But, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a weird, like, there's no Smith about it, you know? There's no Richardson or any of that stuff. So it's the Einbinder experience is a cold and isolating one, like the Russian planes we came from.
Were there people that told you, like, maybe, you know, maybe Hannah Binder, you know, or like, you know, like yeah, do something, you know what I mean? Like,
they were like, I mean, I always, I still even today meet people who have changed their names because their last names are Jewish, and which is funny. It's so like 30s to me. It's so wild that that's still a thing, but I mean, when I was doing open mics, just because I didn't want to like deal with the host, you know, pronouncing my last name wrong, I just wrote Hannah E on the thing, on the little piece of paper. But no one ever really, it didn't occur to me, just because I feel like I'd suffered through all of the like little tiny name mispronunciation and sort of thing my whole life. So I was like, I'm not going through all that and then nixing it. Like,
Yeah, I
want the pharmacist to be like Einbinder, you know.
Yeah. Well, I and also too, it feels like, I mean, for me, like, I was aware when I started in this business that it's kind of a bullshit business. Like, there's a lot of just like a lot of bullshit, a lot of gross phony crap about it. And it's like to start out with like, well, I have to change the name that I've called myself my entire life because of whatever reason, it feels like a setting off into like, you know, phony forest being, you know, like I'm going to be phony right at the beginning when it's like, it's a struggle to stay away from that. If it matters to you, you know, so.
And it's also such like a, it's almost kind of like, I mean, everyone should do what they wish, et cetera, et cetera. But like, there's something that I just like, can't help but picture these people's ancestors who changed their names and they're just like holding on to keep the generations going through the plague or something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
someone changes their last name to like Star or some shit. And it's just like, wow. Wow, yep. The ghosts are mad, yep. You know?
Although, like, I do have friends. Like, I had a friend who, when I lived in New York, who lived on the Lower East Side, and he was like a New Jersey Jewish kid. And his grandparents were furious at him because it was like, we struggled so hard to get out of that neighborhood, and now you're moving back there? Like, it was like a slap in the face to them. Like, well, we don't care how hip it is and how cool it is and artsy. It was gross. Get those, you know,
coffee beans at home. You don't need to go there.
Damn it. That's right. Now you're an LA kid, right?
Yeah. We've been here a while. We've been here since 1909.
Wow.
Yeah.
What neighborhood did you grow up in?
Westwood, right by
Westwood.
Yeah, UCLA.
Do you find among LA kids that there's a sort of a character difference between the different neighborhoods? Like Silver Lake kids are different than Westwood kids are different than Sherman Oaks kids.
I would almost say that it's less about neighborhoods and more about schools.
Like, and that makes sense.
You know, like kids come from all over to go to, you know, let's say a Crossroads.
Yes.
A sort of like, you know, there are no grades and we don't use pencils, only paint, and like sort of hippie schools. So that's sort of like more what shapes, I think, the youth of Los Angeles. I experience both the, like, you know, super artistic, like magnet type thing, and also public school for high school. So they are certainly different worlds, but everyone ends up equally as fucked up. So that's good.
Yeah. I have a 20-year-old son, and my kids go to Campbell Hall.
Oh,
my
yeah.
daughter's still in Campbell Hall. But like, you know, my son's boyfriend is that he's been together with for like 4 years now, 4 or 5 years, which is amazing. Like that they've held together because his boyfriend goes to school in Washington, D.C. and Will's here at UC or USC, which, I mean, as much as that's meant anything in the last year, but it's just amazing to me that they have been able to hold together a high school relationship, much less a LA high school relationship, and maintain it in a very healthy, loving way.
Because it was remote, were they able to stay in the same place and just do school online?
Not the last semester, because his boyfriend had a lease on an apartment and was like, I'm going to be paying for this apartment. I might as well be in DC. And if anything happens, you know, I can be closer to school. But it's been rough. And I mean, and I, you know, on one hand, I want to say, honey, you got to learn to live your own life. I know it's hard. And but then on the other end, it's like young and in love and they're miserable when they're apart. Well, how am I to say that's wrong? You know? So.
Yeah, and I hear the Gen Zers are very like anti-commitment and all of these things. So that they have that sort of classic thing, super special.
Yeah. And it's just natural. They don't even, you know, I never get any sense that there's trouble in paradise. Let's just say, I probably already said too much and he's going to be pissed at me. But I just bring him up because, you know, my kids are Campbell Hall. Will's boyfriend is Oakwood.
Yeah.
And it just really does seem like and it doesn't matter where you go to school. They all end up knowing each other. They all end up like churning in the same froth of, you know, giant house parties in Sherman Oaks and, you know, and hangouts and, you know, too much weed, which is now. That nowadays, yeah, Jesus Christ, it's like it's vape pens. It's the vape pens. It's too easy. I speak from experience. It's like there's nothing to tip anyone off. There's just these secret pens.
You know? Everything looks like a USB. There's no
right.
You just plug it into your laptop and the teacher
right.
has your fucking clothes. Yeah.
Now, what are your? I know what your mom does, but I don't know what your dad does. What do your folks do?
My dad works in advertising. He's a director of commercials.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. And he's been doing that for a long time. Has he been in advertising and became a director through advertising or?
Yeah, he used to, he started in the Groundlings and then sort of did the path of like Groundlings transition to like booker of like commercials, basically. Like he was one of those, like, you know, he did a couple national commercials and then he kind of was like, I feel like more of a writer and kind of creative on the other side. And so he transitioned to a director.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I had never left Chicago, I would be doing advertising. I've directed commercials a little bit. Yeah. Because, I started in Chicago in film and that means commercials mostly, mm-hmm. if you're non-union. And I have friends that's, you know, still that just are there and now they're in charge of things. And so I've directed a few commercials and now that my schedule is uncluttered, I expect to direct some more. Mm-hmm. And your mom is Lorraine Newman.
Yep.
I don't know if you know that. was she from out here? Yep. Is she a California? Oh, okay.
Yep.
So, and did your folks meet at the Groundlings?
My parents met at AA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
One of my favorite of the Hans Christian Andersen.
Well, that's beauty. It's not exactly anonymous either. That's the thing. They should have made up a story or something. Yeah. You know,
we met at church.
Yeah,
not
we met through we met through jingles. how is it to, you know, how is it to grow up with two Groundlings produced parents? I imagine your mom was a Groundling, was she not? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it like, you know, get out of bed and go do comedy? Yeah. You know?
You're late for your two-man scene.
I want more freeze tags. Get down here, young lady.
New choice. honestly, it just was the language spoken in our house, as I'm sure it is in yours.
Yeah.
And aside from that, there was no pressure. I did not. In fact, I think they probably discouraged me from doing it. And I had no desire to do it as a kid. I just liked
it.
You know, my mom played a lot of like the LA alternative comics in the car, you know, Dana Gould and, well, he's via Boston, but like Dana and the Sklar brothers and Maria Bamford and like that sort of seeped into my brain pretty early on.
Yeah.
There wasn't, I mean, I also was kind of like an aimless kid. I liked the news. I liked to watch.
It's a good way to find out what's happening.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm debatable at this point in time, but.
Right.
Okay. Political at 11:20 a.m. Uh-oh. Good morning.
That's all right. If I can't tell Megan that she blocked me, then you can do it here. It's a safe space.
Oh my God. Great. Yeah. I deleted my Twitter because I felt that it was toxic, but.
Was that pre hacks?
It was during hacks. I figured, I said, you know what? I always told myself if I ever got any sort of temporary job security of any kind, I would leave Twitter because it just made me real, real sad. And I just kind of felt creatively it was not a good use of my time, you know?
Yeah.
I wasn't able to divorce my sort of like comedy brain from thinking of tweets, and I just was like not thinking of my stand-up, so it was like not great for.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Nazis found me on there, and they like would DM me, like they would just, you know, write shit on my tweets or write shit on my friends' tweets, and so I just say sayonara, guys. But
Yeah, I came to it as a grown up, so I kind of, you know, was already had some calluses built up, and I am a liberal blocker. I, you know, fuck around, you find out. Like I just like to me, it's like I'm here. I'm there mainly for fun, mainly because I like to. Well, also too. It's social media. I have friends that I have never met, you know?
Yeah.
And then I have people that I met on there that are now some of the best friends that I have because we spoke this same language of jokes, you know? And if you know that language, you can know a person pretty well from like 5 or 6 jokes, depending on the jokes. Like you can be like, okay, I have a pretty good picture of who this person is and I like them, or I have a good picture of this person and no thanks.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the truly purest, form of the thing. I think that's great.
I still try and stick to that, but I don't succeed all the time.
Yeah. Know? Well, you know, it's the internet. It's cavernous.
Right. Right. But yeah, but no, I don't blame you. I mean, I have my days and I have also deleted it at times.
Yeah.
And now that I don't have a job, I might have to like stop just shitting out jokes for free every time it occurs to me at a red light. So I might have to be like, no, this one, I should make some money off of this shit.
There you go.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Do you know someone struggling to figure out their mental health benefits? The Mental Health Insurance Assistance Office is here to help. Find us at insurance.ohio.gov/GETMHIA or call us at 855-438-6442. Don't wait. The Mental Health Insurance Assistance Office can help you figure out what mental health insurance benefits may be in their plan. Call us today at 855-438-6442.
Ashley's Memorial Day sale is going on now. Shop our biggest selection of hot buys, cool deals, or shop limited-time savings on new summer spaces. Plus, get 72-month special financing on select in-store mattress purchases made with your Ashley Advantage Synchrony credit card between May 14th and June 3rd. Whether you're redecorating indoors or rethinking your outdoor space, save big on this season's trending styles. Only at Ashley. Subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. No minimum purchase required. See store for details.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
What was school like for you growing? First of all, are you an only kid?
No, I have an older sibling, and then I have 4 step-siblings.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. So kind of a big, busy house then.
Kind of, although not, I mean, everyone's kind of scattered. My parents divorced when I was like 20 or 21. We didn't grow up together, the step siblings and I, but I love them very dearly. I got really lucky in that department. My stepmother Wendy is also really lovely. She was married twice before, so 2 of them are my step and 2 of them are my step-step, but they all grew up together, so they're all 4 kind of blood to one another.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I inherited Wendy, I inherited them. And they're great. They're all like sort of around my age, you know, they're like 24 to 27. It's just like having a bunch of new friends.
That's cool. Wonderful. That's really, really great. Like that's one of my joys is my kids liking their cousins. Like it just, especially from being kind of isolated from, you know, my homeland, my Midwestern homeland and all my people.
Yeah.
It's nice that they're making that connection, you know, because
how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older brother and then a younger brother and sister who are technically half brother, but it's like you say, I don't think of them as anything other than half. Now you went to public school, you said, for high school?
Yeah.
Where was that?
I went to Beverly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how was that? Did you public school in LA, you know?
Yeah, it was interesting because I came from a private art school. It was a difficult a very, very difficult adjustment period. Because, you know, I mean, the classes were like Latin and sculpture and like poetry and all of these things, you know, that shit. And everyone in the school I came from had what would be qualified as a learning disability by public school standards, you know, hyperactive, attention deficit, maybe a little bit of a spectrum-y type situation. Just neurodivergent kids. And so going to public school was pretty, it was a really hard transition. And, you know, it was one of those things where I was put in like the special classes, which was just like not great for the self-esteem. Kids are vicious. And so like, you know, the class was called LI, which stood for learning impaired.
What a great name for it. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, awesome school. Stuff. Love that. Yeah. Love that. But, yeah.
And you're what, 14 at this point?
Yeah. 14.
Yeah. 15. What a great time to have that shit laid on you. Yeah.
Stuff. It's like, hey, sorry, you are a woman, but there's more. We're also learning impaired. So get out there, chief. Have fun.
Maybe they probably thought you didn't know you were a woman because you were learning impaired.
Yeah, it wasn't awesome, but yeah. I always like had a tough go of things socially. Like as a little kid, I was real sensitive. And so I think there is something to be said about like the specific brand of psychological warfare of specifically Los Angeles private school girls.
Yeah.
Because they absorb the, like in some cases, you know, insane qualities of their high powered parents.
Yeah.
And sort of, yeah, I just kind of like, I feel like we are all kind of born with certain dispositions and personalities. And so mine always was kind of like people could sniff out my sensitivity and I had to kind of navigate that through school. And then when I went to public school, it was like, it existed in a different way. I feel like when I started dating, you know, I just had like, you know, shitty boyfriends back to back. So it was like, it was tough. I mean, life is, you know, whatever.
But I mean, did you learn like coping mechanisms? Like, and how did you sort of, I mean, or were you just fucked up? And, you know, I'm by fucked up, I mean like beat up. Were you just like beaten up and then got the hell out of there and were glad to go?
You know, I figured it out about, you know, halfway through high school, but I also was heavily medicated. I was failing math and science, and it just was not, you know, I was not at the level of my peers.
Yeah.
And so they put me on a lot of Adderall. And that kind of shut me down. So I didn't really feel a lot of the things that I was feeling before, because I wasn't really feeling a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I was like, when I entered public school, I was in this group with, you know, basically I was integrated into my my boyfriend's friend group, and those were kind of like the like druggy kids, and I'm
yeah,
like, hey, cool. And then he was like, you know, terrible. And
and he was like, I hope he's listening.
Yeah,
fuck you, buddy.
Fuck you. No, I he, you know, forgive and forget, you know, well, forgive and remember, actually.
Right. Of course. Yeah. What's the point of forgiving and forgetting? You're just going to do the same thing.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. But then, yeah, I had a lovely friend who's my best friend to this day, Phoebe Mandel. And she just kind of saw that I was a bit of a loner and just like scooped me up and brought me into her little friend group. And then from then on, I had a cool girl group. And I was just with them, and it was really nice.
That's great.
Yeah. She, I, our, she's just so, I owe her so much. She's the best. She saw me and she saw me and we had English together, and she came up to me and she said, "Hey, you know, I know I was grounded for smoking weed. And so I was, you know, not able to go out with my boyfriend and his friends." And PB came up to me in English class and she said, "Hey, I don't think anyone's going to tell you this, but I saw him hooking up with this girl at a party this weekend. And I just wanted to let you know, because, you know, I don't think there are people around you who are going to tell you." And so I broke up with him and she kind of was like, "Do you want to be friends with me?"
And it that's great.
So nice. And she's the best.
That's, yeah, I think that's just what you kind of, I mean, on this podcast, a frequent topic, because, you know, I would say the bulk of this podcast has been funny weirdos. And since we're talking about your youth, the topic of finding your tribe comes up all the time. And it is essential, because like my daughter's 15 and she went through that mean girl, horrible shit and the particularly toxic LA version of it. Mm-hmm. And now she's like, "All right, well, that's going to keep going on. I'm not going to, you know, I'll just go over here with these cool people."
Yeah.
And we'll hang out and be nice to each other. And that's really all there is to do. You're not going to change, certainly not the culture of this place.
No.
You just are going to have to find the good ones. And there's a lot of really, you know, there's a lot of really great fucking people here. You know, I mean, this town, for as much as it's deserved reputation as horseshitville, there's a lot of really great real people here, and it's a real place to live, you know. So did you go to college at all?
I did. I went to Chapman University in Orange County, California.
Sure, the Huell Hauser University.
Yes.
Do you know anything about that? That's why I know Chapman.
Really?
It's because do you know Huell Hauser?
Honestly, I've heard the name, but I actually don't. I don't.
Yeah, know. He was a PBS host here for years and years and years, and it was always like, "This show sponsored by the California Teachers Board," and the, you know, and then like the California School Drivers Bus Board, and it's all just, you know, going out to some weird place in the desert and talking to old people. And it is just the most meditative TV. Will Ferrell did a parody of him, and a lot of James Adomian does an amazing version of Huell Hauser, but I recommend it just as weird. Like, just Google Huell Hauser and look at some YouTube clips, because it is the weirdest, some of the weirdest, most, like, almost has like a Jim Jarmusch-y feel to it in a very naive way, you know, like just really, really odd stuff. But anyway, his archives are at Chapman University. And now that he's passed away, it always says that at the end. So,
yeah,
fascinating stuff, I know. But
I mean, look, you know, Chapman is full of those little like, "Well, did you know that this person is a donor?" Like, it's all that.
Yeah.
It's super. It's super like, it feels like Chapman's existence is just like running 10 feet behind USC, just like trying so desperately to get. Every Chapman kid's story was that they didn't get into USC. Like all of the dance majors were like 5'2", you know? It was just like, they got the skill and they're the weirdos, but like they, you know, all, none of us like just really made the cut in any, in any real way. So it was just full of like the like defected jelly bellies that were just like weirdly shaped.
Did you live in a dorm there, or were you commuting, or?
Freshman year, I lived in a dorm, and then my sophomore year, I lived in a house that was, it's an old town Orange, so a lot of the houses are historical landmarks because they're over 100 years old.
Yeah.
And I lived in a house that was like 116 years old, and The pipes were just terrible. And it was like a party house that we inherited. Yeah. And, you know, we just like kind of went in there, and the pipes burst during finals and the place flooded. And that was, you know,
helpful.
Yeah. That was a metaphor for what was to come.
So yeah.
The best results. But it was kind of scattered, our living situation. I don't even remember where I lived my senior year. Where did I live? Oh yeah, I lived in a different little house. It was very like all the kids, you know, just kind of like lived in small houses in the neighborhood around school.
Yeah. Did it feel like you were away from home when you lived there? Or did you, there's a difference. If you stay home for college, it's a different kind of development than if you're off on your own, you know?
Yes, totally. It didn't feel like, I mean, it didn't feel like either of my parents were going to, you know, drive up in a huff,
me
or anything. But I did end up towards the end of school going back to LA a lot just to start doing open mics. So yeah. I did see my parents. I did see my mom a lot. So it felt pretty close, but it also was, you know, it's such a radically different culture in Orange County.
It's insane.
And
it's terrible. Amazing.
I mean, yeah, amazing.
Terrible. See, I mean, the difference is amazing, but it's like I can't.
Terrible.
It feels like it's 12 hours away,
yeah,
rather than one and a half or whatever.
It is. I mean, I am so amazed by the truth of the Los Angeles bubble. Literally,
yeah.
It is truly. I mean, it feels so big because you're sitting in traffic for so long, but it's so small. You know,
yeah,
just is so radically different. I mean, it's like I would see. Because it's such a mind fuck. You see kids on the street and they have like surfboards and blonde hair. And you're like, oh, this must be a radical, gnarly dude. Super liberal, super cool, hang loose. He's in the ocean. He's connected to forces greater than himself. He's, you know, really a far out guy. And then like, you know, you overhear him being like, coronavirus was synthesized in a lab by liberals to stop Donald Trump. And you're just like, what the fuck is this intersection of like, California culture and like psychotic shit.
And hickism.
Hickism. You know?
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Well, now what was your major? What would you start out?
I started out as, I was in the film school in Dodge College, and I started out as television broadcast journalism because I read the New York Times cover to cover every morning in high school and in the beginning of college because I was, again, on so much Adderall. And so I was like, I want to be Rachel Maddow. And I, you know,
I want to be two Rachel Maddow.
Yeah. Fighting each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess in retrospect, like Rachel Maddow truly is an actor, right? Because she's, I mean, an orator truly.
Yes.
She is
selling
the cop.
And it's,
you know?
it's a TV show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's when you look at like old Walter Cronkite, just relaying facts and, you know, just literally, you know, like C-SPAN adjacent, just like whatever. There's so much theater involved in MSNBC. It's truly, I mean, what my favorite thing that Rachel does is the way that she gestures with her pencil. The pencil to me is just, you know, bouncing it on the table and you know, sort of just like wiggling it around and just like the way that she sort of as if it's a wand. It's like,
yes,
theater. This is a monologue. You are an actress. You're
right.
And she's, you know, she's great, but
So she does one thing though. I mean, I'm just going to bitch about it right here for a second because it is like, it's a TV technique. Like, Andy Kindler one time said, sometimes Rachel Maddow presents information as if she's talking to someone who's never heard information before. And she does that. And what I see in it is it's a stretch, like it's stretching. Cause like, say there's like, you know, there's like a toxic dump behind a preschool that's owned by a congressman. And she'll say like, this congressman owns a preschool and there's a toxic dump behind it. There's a toxic dump in property that's owned by a representative and it's a preschool. Preschool with children in it,
right,
that's owned by a representative. There's a toxic dump. And it's like
4 years old, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. We know, you know. But it's like, okay, she just probably doesn't have, like, you know, like,
it's just not.
She's just ripping, trying to fill up that top act, yep. You know.
She's on the road, you know.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
So you really, did you think that's what you're going to do? What dissuaded you from that?
Honestly, I started doing improv on my school's team. And I kind of was like, oh, I don't think that I think I'm kind of going on a different path here. I just started doing improv and I wasn't really great at it, to be honest, in the beginning and really the middle or the end. But,
now come on.
I will say I'm good at it now. Because I have sort of because I am able to do this sort of free thinking and or not thinking that is required.
Yeah, getting out of yourself.
Yeah, but because I was coming out of this like sort of drug haze, I was so in my head and I was unable to, you know, it was just like, should I say this? Oh no, like just like the cyclical criticism internally that was really stopping me from, you know, getting words out.
Yeah.
But I loved watching everybody on my team because they were so good. And it was so great. I was working as like a PA on a film set, and this, I just started talking to someone and he was like, you know, you should try out for the team. Like you, and I didn't even know it existed, honestly, on campus.
Oh, wow.
I had a little bit of a crush on him. And so I was like, are you going to be there? You know, I just kind of like, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I went to the tryouts and I remember like crying afterwards for the first time in a really long time. Cause I just was like, I did something vulnerable and I didn't feel comfortable and it's, you know, scared me. And, I got a callback for the next, round and I didn't take my Adderall, for like the first time in years. And I actually did, like, I was able to be there and present. And I just was like, yeah, I'm changing everything. Like this actually worked. And I never took, Adderall ever again. And I just started doing, you know, comedy, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that a big turning point? I mean, you know, was it, do you think it really was just that simple of stopping taking that medication?
Yeah. Yeah. I was truly a different person, I think. Really like muted and kind of zombie-ish, you know. Mm-hmm. When you have ADD and ADHD, Adderall does not act as a stimulant. It yep. counteracts, you know, what's going on already.
I'm familiar. I mean, as someone with ADD,
yeah,
you know, who took it for a while and then for just various old man health reasons, like
your heart.
Blood pressure. Yeah, I can't do it anymore, which is okay. You know, I have had to learn to cope, you know, like with the fact that I can't read a book, you know, but I have to read a book in like 10 minute chunks.
Yeah. Well, you got to love the book. You got to really love it.
Yes. Yes.
And then you're obsessed, right?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And, but my kids are on it. You know, my kids have the same thing and my kids are on it, and it's not always great. Mm-hmm. But all in all, with the different adjustments, it is somewhat necessary. Sure. You know, like, my daughter went from being a kid that couldn't stay in her chair. Mm-hmm. I mean, and literally for, I think it was like through third grade, the teacher would look and she'd be gone, which is not good. Like, teachers do not like to see that a child is just plain missing. Mm-hmm. And then she'd just be like at the nurse's office chatting with them,
oh my God, you know,
a courtyard over, you know, looking at a tree. But she's a straight A student now. She just finished her freshman year of high school. And I mean, when she started doing homework too, it was the entire household's homework.
Yes.
Like, you know,
yeah.
It was everyone's. I would come home from work, and until she went to bed, it was about her homework.
Yes.
And, mm-hmm. that was really rough.
Yeah.
And there was, and like I say, there was adjustment, but I mean, I do think it's necessary, but I also, you know, I've been through what you're talking about with them too, you know, and you have to make these adjustments because it's just, I mean, I was a fucking wreck. In my youth, I didn't have anything like that. Yeah. I just had a miserable time.
Yeah.
I got B's, like I was like a B+, A- student. But and always with like, you could do so much better if you just apply yourself. And it's right. Like, well, I can't fucking apply myself.
Yeah.
You know?
No, totally.
And then when you get to college and there's, you know, drugs introduced and just life outside of anyone's control, it gets even worse. And I mean, I just felt like at times like a hoarder in my junk pile of unfinished tasks.
I know.
You know? Almost like it was keeping me warm. Like, well, if I do one thing, then I'll have to confront all of them. I'll just lay here under this big pile of my own shitty disappointment.
But it's why you are so good at what you do. It's like the key of your ability to sort of like rapid fire.
Yeah.
It's such a gift, you know.
It is. And I mean, it's like I can be very much in the moment, and I can, not so much anymore, but like when I was doing improv all the time, I had the experience of things coming out of my mouth that I was surprised. Like good things, you know what I mean? Like the perfect ender to this scene.
Right.
And it would come out of my mouth and I'd be like, that just came out, you know, like. Yeah. And that's fucking magical when that happens.
It is. And I completely feel you on like, I think it's just, it's that like we as like ADD, ADH people are kind of like a round peg in the square hole of the system, man. And like, you know, your kids are like that.
Have you seen The Joker?
like looking in a fucking mirror.
Yeah, I've never seen my own autobiography so portrayed so well.
I look great in green and purple too. That's just a side note. But you know, it's like you and your kids and me, and by the way, both my parents were on Adderall, and my older sibling, we were all on it. It was the only, you know, good morning and here's your coffee and here's your meth. But like, you know, I wasn't a B student. I was getting Fs. Like I was failing these classes. It was a last resort. And it was, you know, the only reason I graduated public school. Like it did serve that purpose. And I also am so like, I really think it's dangerous to say like this drug is bad. Like it does yes. help people, and like every, you know, everything in moderation and, you know, different brain chemistry, whatever. I just got to the point where I was taking too much, and I was on it too long, you know, and I was at school for something creative, you know, I didn't need it. You know, you get through math and science, and then you go to, you know, in my case, you go to a liberal arts school and you can just do English and, you know, all the things that you love. And, and I also was just smoking way too much weed, and it was like very high potency and, you know, every just constantly. So I was, there was a whole other factor there, but
That's the other thing too, is that like, you know, weed for me, especially when I was young, weed was like self-medicating for depression.
Sure.
But then, you know, when you then start to actually, you know, get a health plan and you can take medication that's a mood stabilizer.
Yeah.
I always felt like the periods when I was smoking weed, it was like, I'm on these, you know, high tech mood stabilizers. Let me get a bucket of marbles and dump them on the floor of my mood, you know, like, let me get real stoned and then wonder why I feel so shaky the next day, you know?
Oh my God.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there is something to like, I don't know. What's your experience like with weed now?
I really kind of have to avoid it.
Yeah.
I still like it a lot. I just, for me, the basic thing about it is it's like a contentment toggle switch.
Sure.
I can be, I actually have come a long way just in terms of like being a depressed person.
Yeah.
I have gotten pretty undepressed in the last probably 10 years. And it's been a process, but it's been for lots of different things. One of which could just possibly be like, I just stopped. You know, like I got to be an age where just whatever the brain chemistry factory, you know, which would be my brain, just kind of started to regulate in a better way. Whereas, you know, I went through years of, you know, like, the things are like your love life, your career, you know, like your sort of artistic set, you know, like those three, you know, channels were full and fruitful and lovely. You know, I was in love. I had a great job. I felt fulfilled creatively, and I still didn't give a shit whether I was alive or not.
Yeah.
I still walked around feeling like just who cares about anything, you know?
Of course.
And it blows. And so, but I mean, I got past that. And now, I mean, I still like, what's also nice about going on and off the wagon with weed is like the first time you get high after not getting high for a while is fantastic.
Yep.
It's the greatest. but then 3 days later, I'm like, I haven't done a fucking thing.
Yeah.
I have not, you know, like the sink is full of dishes. You know, I watched a lot of that kind of mediocre Italian crime drama, but you know, I haven't really done any of the things I need to do. And also I eat like it's like there's a dinner bell at 10 p.m. that I do not need ringing. I just have to abstain. It's like one of those just grown up things of like, yeah, it is. You know, skiing is fun, but you could break your leg. And do you want to break your leg? No, I don't. You know,
there is absolutely something to the doing it for the first time in a very long time, and it's out of your system. And then you feel this sort of like clean high, and you accept, you know, you expect that the next day it is going to be like that.
You're
groggy. You're just ruined. You can only do it once in a while and then not again.
Right. Right.
But I have found like I'm not on any sort of medication right now. I haven't been since Adderall, although I would probably benefit from a little bit of an anti-anxiety, but look, you know, it's fine. It gives me an edge. That's fine. I like to, what has worked for me has been to only smoke weed during the day when I am out on a walk and it's sunny, because you just put on the Scissor Sisters and I feel like they're dancing, you know, you just fucking, oh my God.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, truly. Yeah. I can't smoke weed if there are walls. you know?
Yeah.
Can't do it indoors. You got to be out. It's got to be sunny. You got to be, you know, sunscreen and a dream. Like, that's the only way for me.
And a smart hat.
Yes. Oh my God. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my God. I mean, don't make me break out my sun hat, because you won't be able to see my.
All right. Yeah, we could do a trying on hats montage on an audio podcast.
Yes, you doing the classic hand on chin, shaking, no, shaking,
yeah,
shaking.
Not that one.
And then, yeah, it's a weird, journey, like, navigating these brains, huh?
Yeah. It takes a while, you know, takes a while. So anyway, let's keep going with your life. You get out of college and just come home and do stand up pretty much, right?
Yeah. I started doing, open mics, obviously, like, a psycho every night, like Nightcrawler out there, just, as many as I possibly could. And then, get that sort of, I sometimes, like, romanticize the beginning when I knew no one and I kind of was just like, alone, just, in the corner of, like, all of these places that have gone out of business, like, trying it. And, from there, you get booked on shows, and, from there, it just kind of became like a thing where I mean, there are so many, the LA comedy scene is both, like, it's both very, very difficult and, like, a lovely, supportive, great place. Coming up here is, like, so it's a blessing and a curse for most, I think, because you're just, like, so, it's great because you can really go quickly because there are, scouts in the audience or whatever. But it's also, like, you kind of get off to a running starter. At least in my case, I kind of, like, 1 year, 2 years in, I kind of started to, like, I got management, and then I kind of, like, started to do opening gigs and, like, started to do, the Colbert thing. And it almost felt like when the pandemic hit, I was like, oh my God, I can catch up. Like, I can.
Oh, wow.
I can kind of catch up to the opportunity, which is obviously the most horrific thing for anyone to say, because Jesus Christ, shouldn't you be ready? And so many people are so talented and so ready and, are still waiting. And so, of course, saying that makes me feel terrible, but it just was the reality of, I was like, okay, so now I gotta get my hour together, but I'm only 4 years in to stand up.
Yeah.
So,
nobody's really ready. I mean, there are some people that are ready, but you don't, until you're there, you're not aware of, like, what it takes. And I mean, and stand up is its own thing.
Yeah.
But I just remember when I started to get, cause I performed improv forever in Chicago, and then I did a stage show forever. And then when I started to get real, like, auditions that weren't just for some, like, a Walgreens an extra in a Walgreens commercial, I just felt like, well, they're treating me like I'm legit, and I guess I just should act like it, I'll figure it out as they go. When I got my first job on a movie, it was a small speaking role on a movie, I didn't have any idea what the fuck I was doing.
Yeah.
And you just have to be like, all right, let's turn it around. Let's come around. And, like,
what does that mean? I know.
And then you just stand there for a minute and wait, like, oh, that's what that means. Okay. That's
funny.
Do you think that first of all, I want to ask this. Why stand up versus improv? Since you had done both.
I am so much better when I can prepare.
I see.
I feel so, I feel like I really need time to articulate myself because I'm so scatterbrained. And because I have, anxiety, and I feel I am always, I haven't done improv in a really long time, so I would be interested to see what it felt like now when I feel more confident on stage and as a comedian and, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I at the time I was like, God, I went home from every improv practice and I was like, I should have said this there, this there, this there, this there. And it would have been great had I thought of it in the moment, but it really has to do with, I think, my comfortability in my head and in my body, which I was not, you know? Mm-hmm. So stand up was like, I can go home. I can take hours and days and weeks and months and work on something and make sure that it aligns with how I actually feel, what I actually think, my intentions, et cetera. And that is something that I feel I need time to do, because if I just blurt things, I feel like I don't always articulate myself as well as I know I can.
Yeah. Yeah. So did COVID then end up being sort of like a good thing for you in the terms of like just giving you even a hyper extended kind of version of that phenomenon?
Yeah, it was that and all the death. I was like, okay, this is awesome.
Do you have to be a bummer?
I'm sorry. I think the break was I will tell you, I had 9 months of writer's block.
Before
the pandemic hit, and the first week I was just clickety clackety on the keys.
Oh, that's great!
Day one, yeah. All of the pressure of this, of the industry that had collapsed before my eyes just released, and I said, "Oh, it's gone. Now it's just about the work, and I have no external forces pushing me to hurry up and be ready for quote unquote, you know, an hour. And I feel like I can just do this art form." I always wrote from my room. I don't really talk about like this happened to me today or last week or whatever on stage. So I've always kind of written in captivity. And again, I'm like so conscious of the fact that like there are so many comedians who have hours and hours, and you know, the experience of like needing to catch up is a fortunate one certain it just was, you know, the way it was for me. But then, you know, hacks happened during the pandemic entirely, from start to finish, just like the casting process was going on during that time. So I kind of picked up in this other way, and it was like, oh, I get to do this completely different yet similar core thing of comedy and comedic acting, which was, you know, that was also kind of like a beautiful departure from any sort of, it almost didn't feel, I mean, yes, there was pressure certainly, but it felt like, because I was coming at it from such a newcomer position, I guess, I felt like it was kind of pure, you know, there wasn't like years and years and years of, with stand up where, you know, it became like work stand up.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, I got to clock in and I got to figure this out. And it, you know, took kind of the fun out of it. And I felt like, I don't know, I was able to kind of transfer the feeling that I got with getting that break from it to the acting.
If
that makes sense.
It makes absolute sense. Yeah. Was it daunting to be put into this thing where you were going to be acting so much? Had you acted, I mean, just in quantity of acting, had you done that before?
Before Hacks, I had maybe two lines in a buddy of mine's film.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I just played like a waitress and I was like, hey, Johnny, or whatever, you know?
Right. Like, oh, that was you.
Yes.
Oh, you're at the Hey Johnny gal.
I am waitress number 7, blue eyeshadow. It was my first, it kind of was just like, all right, well, I feel like human beings, we just will adapt. Fucking pandemic hit and everyone, the air was poison and we all were like, all right, mask up. We all just were like, that's the world now, you know?
Yeah.
And I just felt like I was like, all right, this is the world now. And
yeah,
I was scared shitless, of course, but.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's like I said, I throughout my life have relied on other people in a relative kind of way. And, you know, like you're working with people, and especially on this show, you're working with people with a real track record and people that mm-hmm. it's just, they're inherently talented. Like they know what they're doing. They're smart. You read the script. Yeah, this is great. They're saying to me, we think you can do this. I've been that whole way, like, all these people around me and they're capable. I know they're capable. They're saying I can do this. All right. I'm going to just take them at their word and just do it. You know?
Yeah. I think I got to that point maybe when we had like a week left in the entire shit. I was like, well, if they believe in me, I literally think the day we wrapped, I felt that way.
Yeah.
Like I really genuinely,
it takes a while.
It was because there is such an active force within me telling me that like I'm not shit, honestly. Like mm-hmm. it just is like so loud and it is ever present in every area of my life. And so this was such a this challenged that so much because I'm like, so you don't believe Jean Smart, you don't believe Lucia and Yellow, you don't believe Paul W. Downs, Jen Statsky, you don't believe Mike, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
What's wrong?
Yeah,
yeah. Like, what, really?
Yeah.
What? You can't.
What do you know that they don't know?
Yeah. Nothing is the answer. The answer is nothing to that question. So it's like, you know, what do you. This is not serving us, girly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You need to get yourself a posse of sycophants.
Yeah. I got to get yes men.
Right, right. Oh, my God. You're so fantastic and constantly fussing with you and, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, she's you know, wrong. You're
demanding a break every 3 minutes to fix your makeup, you know.
Yeah.
Well, professionally, I'm sure you've talked about hacks a lot. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if there's like, what's kind of the intangible thing that you've gotten out of it? Not like, you know, people now know who you are and there's, you know, career opportunities, but is there something that you got out of it that like, is just personal and, you know?
I mean, aside from this group of new friends and people I consider, you know, family now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say what I just mentioned about, you know, having no choice but to bend the knee to the idea that I am good.
Yeah.
Could be good.
Yeah.
Or worthy of the opportunity. Like, because of all of the people I respect more than anyone telling me that I am. And that is not something I experience. Like I can't do that thing of like, good job, Hannah. Like I don't have, it's, I was born without that in like written into my situation. So I really more than anything, am so fucking grateful for that because the moments I am able to feel it, it feels really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, it, you know, it takes time and you'll develop that. And like I say, and having used that same methodology, it's good. It works. I also would recommend as sort of like a side strategy, the old, look at that fucking guy. If that fucking guy can do this, I can fucking do this. Jesus Christ. Look at how shitty that thing is. Good Lord. I can do better than that. You know, that has been a huge engine in my career and in my life.
Love it.
Oh, because it's just like there's so much shit out there that it's real easy to go like, Well, I'm a better formed turd than that, you know.
I guess I'm no Sharknado, but I can.
I'm just saying, give it a try. Give judgment a try. And see how it works for
you. I'll dip my toes into judgment. And that's what the episode should be called, I think. Yeah. Or a memoir. I don't know.
Yes, right.
Something.
Well, what are you looking forward to? What's ahead for you? What's kind of like your ideal path from here on out?
You know,
and it doesn't have to be work. You know, I mean, I always love it when people answer that when it's not about work.
Yeah, no pressure.
You knew what this podcast was about.
No. I think the truth is I am looking forward to peace.
Yeah.
I hope I will reach peace. That's like in my physical self, emotional self, life, the world at large. Just a little bit of peace, because I just hope to experience a little bit of that quiet and a little bit of that feeling of calm and sort of the pat on the back and the being okay, I guess.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's patience and it's self-love. Cause I, you know, the one thing, you know, cause the other thing is like, well, the, what you've learned of this, one thing I've learned is that like years and years of being you fucking lazy piece of shit. What's wrong with you? Why don't you do this? It didn't help.
Yeah.
It didn't help. What helps is like, hey, you're a good person. And, you know, really, let's look at the positive aspects of doing this thing that you're having trouble doing. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's a change in conversation. Totally. And it's a seeking peace in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things that I mean, I'm not big on like aphorisms or anything, but one of the things that I tell my kids is work for peace, mm-hmm. like within your life, within your family. When you're about to say something, think about it before you say it. Is this a weapon or is this an olive branch? Mm. Is this going to make things better or is this just you taking out your trash?
Yeah.
You know, and so I think you're on the right track. It takes time, you know. Yeah. And I only say this stuff because I'm old. That's, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be, you know, I'm not Dr. Laura or anything.
No, are you kidding me? I am obsessed with talking about this, and also like we clearly have certain like similarities in our dispositions. Yes. And it's like I have nothing but, you know, respect and love for you and your, you know, your work and,
oh, thank
and you as a comedian. And it's so lovely to get a little bit of wisdom, I feel like.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah. Took you long enough to say that shit. All right. Well, I guess, I mean, is there anything that you can add to kind of what you've learned? I mean, as the final one? She really cracked up at that. I just don't, you know, I mean, I don't want to keep you anymore, you know?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Same time tomorrow.
I don't know if you can handle the fee. Oh. You got SAG insurance. It's not the best, but it'll do.
Look, you know. Sorry, what was your
it, you know, the what have you learned part of this thing, of this podcast? Like,
I mean, to compliment you up top is the number one. That's going to stay with me for the rest of my day.
Yep. There you go. There you go. I guess more generally is what I mean.
You know, that something that I've learned that I feel like I know this, but I guess I want to say I've learned it, and that its importance has become even more, I suppose, relevant or stressed to me from talking, is that we are all really, like, especially comedians, operating from a very similar place. And so I guess remaining open, remaining communicative, and remaining willing to be vulnerable with, with one another is really the key to the most beautiful human connection.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I feel like, the most important thing that any human being could ever do.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. 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 No, it's, I mean, growth isn't going to happen if you're closed, and the whole point is growth.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, like the way muscle grows, you know, it involves tearing down tissue on a cellular level. It scars over and it builds more. And it's like, so it's this constant process of, well, I guess destruction, reclamation, you know, getting rid of old and getting in and in introducing new and clearing out the dead wood for place for new stuff to grow.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm all for that.
Me too.
And thank you so much for doing this. It's great talking to you. It was and kudos on the show and on your stand up and. You know, keep on chugging along.
Thank you, Andy.
You're welcome.
I'm so grateful for this time and also you and your voice and yourself, you know, expanding, you know, across many years, but not so many years, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots and lots of years. It's okay.
Thank you for everything you've given me.
Sure.
And all of us.
Well, thank you. And thank you all out there. That's really nice of you, by the way. And thank all of you out there for listening to the three questions. And we'll be back next week with more. Still three, though.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It is produced by Lane Gerbig, engineered by Marina Pais, and talent produced by Galitza Hayek. The associate producer is Jen Samples, supervising producer Aaron Blair, and executive producers Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts. Can't you tell my love's a growing?
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.